26 degrees, 407. I welcome you to the program here on 590 WKZO. I'm Jeremy Lawrence, taking you through your afternoon. Along with me, producer extraordinaire,
Michael Loudon.
Yeah, I thought you might like that one a little better. Producer extraordinaire.
Yeah.
So it won't happen again.
I just need a crown now.
Well, Burger King has them. We'll have to get you one.
Okay.
So all last hour, we spent some time talking about Obamacare because Terry Lynn Land has come out against it, saying repeal and replace. And there has been some polling data. The survey said that 53% of voters in the state of Michigan were less likely to cast a ballot for an Affordable Care Act or Obamacare supporter. This was a survey that was done by MERS through Target Insight, and it was done of 600 Michigan voters done last week. Now, this is an interesting thing because Terry Lynn Land has come out and said, all right, let's do something about this. And voters seem to be saying, well, yeah, we need to do something, whether it's repeal or replace or fix. There's not too many people that are going, leave it alone. It's just fine. In fact, looking at the survey, they're saying 13% believe that no changes need to be made. I'm wondering, who are these people?
Yeah, really?
The 13 people out of 100 that are going, no, it's fine. It's fine. You know, because there's an awful lot of experiences out there, in spite of what Harry Reid tells you, there are experiences out there of people having to pay a whole lot more for their health care under Obamacare.
Yeah, like you said, not one size fits everybody.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
I wonder what those 13% are thinking then.
And we talked about it last week as well, that there are some places where premiums are going to double and triple next year under Obamacare on the exchange. So that's going to be a problem.
Oh, a big problem.
And you're going to see an awful lot of people that are falling off the rolls of the insured. And at the same time, I mean, you know, I think, what is it, the Obamacare penalty tax, whatever you want to call it, this year is somewhere around $95. It goes up significantly mm-hmm. next year as part of that. Because they're trying to encourage you to get covered. But if it's prohibitively expensive to get covered, then how are you supposed to pay for it? These are the other questions we have to deal with. Now, we had people calling in, 382-4280 and 877-382-4280. And also, we've had people texting as well, and I encourage you to do that at 803-73. You can share your insights there. And we are, in fact, going to head to the phones because Mike's been standing by. Mike, you're with us. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Jerry. Nice to talk to you.
It's Jeremy, but, you know, I'll take it. That's fine.
I heard your comments on you're born, but that doesn't entitle you to the right to health care insurance.
Mm-hmm.
I checked with my accountant before I called, and I paid, I own a large construction company. I paid $14 million in matching Social Security benefits last year.
Mm-hmm.
Did I do that? What if people are not entitled to health care, why should we say they're entitled to a retirement that I have to pay $14 million of my money into?
Well, I mean, I think the two issues are totally separate in terms of how we approach them. I'm not a big fan of Social Security myself anyway, but I think the two issues are totally separate.
How?
Well, they're separate because retirement is something, and let's face it, the government is not providing retirement for you. They're giving you just a pittance, and you end up having to fund your own retirement somewhere or another, or you don't, and you take your chances.
Well, I pay $14 million for other people, though.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's a cost of doing business.
Well, that's what Obamacare is, cost of doing business.
Now, here's the thing, though. If it's a cost of doing business, and it's a cost that is not one you have had in the past, then you're going to have to do something to offset that cost, aren't you?
Increase my prices, which most of my work is done for government agencies bidding large contracts.
Mm-hmm.
So the government's going to end up paying the extra additional.
Well, and there's the thing. We break it down, though. If the government's paying the extra and additional, the government is, they get their money how? They get it from us.
Exactly. Exactly.
So we're talking about prices going up on everything, and that's not a good thing either.
I agree. So I just get tired of all the Obama bashing. I mean, you know, let the Republican Party come out with something definitive that we can look at as an alternative to Obamacare. Be proactive instead of just, I mean, I listen to talk radio all the time, All we issue is Obamacare. The Republicans, what would you guys talk about if you didn't have Obamacare to bash?
Well, and first of all, I mean, you talk about Obama bashing. It's not Obama. I have nothing against the man personally. I just don't like his ideas. Now, to get at another thing that you said there, coming up with an alternative, I want to ask, are you familiar with the 2017 project?
I am not.
I encourage you to look this up. It's 2017project.org. It is an alternative to Obamacare. Talking about the different things that can be done, market-based solutions rather than one-size-fits-all government. And I think it's worth looking into. It's not gotten the publicity that it should have, but I think it's something that's worth talking about as an alternative.
Okay. One final thing I will say. Personally, my health insurance was costing me approximately $3,500 a month.
Mm-hmm.
I have lupus, and I'm 66 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Love Obamacare. And there's a whole lot of us out there that do. So let's just wait for the election and we'll see what happens.
I guess we'll see. All right. Thanks for your call. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
And we move from Mike to Chris. Chris is on the line from Richland. Chris, welcome to the program.
Hi. Yeah, it's kind of funny how, you know, the last few callers are supporters of Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. And they, you know, it seems to me that they go with the premise that it's a right somehow.
Mm-hmm.
That somehow, and you alluded to it earlier, that health care is a right. It's not a right. Find me in the Constitution where it defines health care as a right.
Mm-hmm.
Find me anywhere in the Constitution where it says that somebody else has to provide free to you something, anything. You know, so the doctor's supposed to provide it for you? Well, if the doctor's not providing it for you, somebody else providing it for you, they're paying for it. How am I a slave to somebody else's need? I pay for what I need as I should pay for what I need, and you should pay for what you need.
Mm-hmm.
And if you need help, ask me for help, and I will do the best I can to help you.
I think that's the bottom line. If you look at this, you know, you talk about, I mean, we're a compassionate people in America, probably more compassionate than a lot of other places in the world. If there are people that are in need of some help, particularly when it comes to health care, if they can't afford it, I know there's an awful lot of people in America that are going to come up alongside and say, you know what, let me give you a helping hand. They're going to do this, you know, privately, one-on-one, rather than say, hey, here's a government bureaucracy that's going to take care of everything.
Yeah, or take everybody else's decisions away. You know, this all was based on the premise that there were 30 million or whatever, however many people that were not in the health care system.
Mm-hmm.
And many of those people, most of those people, were not in there voluntarily. They made a decision, like I did when I was younger. I didn't work for a construction company that provided insurances. I worked pretty much on my own as a private subcontractor,
mm-hmm.
and I made the decision not to have health care coverage and trade for more dollars. And now, and since then, I've made a decision that now I need to get into the health care market, and I've made that adjustment.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've now signed up, 5 million people, half of which already had insurance and were kicked out of the market,
mm-hmm.
many of which have not paid for their insurance. And in trade for that, we've taken everybody else's decisions away. You know, now you have to have a mandated policy that covers this, this, and this, and can't cover anything else and can't cover anything less. You know, so like you have said many times, you know, men have to pay for pregnancies, and women have to pay for prostate exams. You know, why don't I just get a plan that covers what I need?
Mm-hmm.
And that between me and my insurance company.
You know, and I think the problem that I had with this all along, and it's something that, you know, I've talked to people that I've known for years. The idea that, you know, you've got this plan that they sold from the beginning as it's going to cost everyone less and we're going to be able to provide care for more people and, you know, insurance for more people. And I knew from the beginning, you know what, that there is no way on earth to sustain that.
It's simple math.
Exactly.
You know, that was the funny thing about the whole discussion is that if you are willing to suspend logic and math, this can work.
Mm-hmm.
I think it can. But, you know, we shouldn't have to do that. We should, you know, it's like one of the callers said, well, the Republicans haven't put up an idea. They put up a lot of ideas. And although they were all locked out of committees, and they passed this without a single vote. And there were a lot of Republicans who agreed that something had to be done with the medical, at least insurance, in the rate of increase of the cost of insurance, that it was coming to a head. We for sure needed to do something about health care reform. But taking it over by the government isn't the solution to that problem. And that is what they've replaced it with. They've taken it out of the free market and made it another government, highly regulated industry, not just the medical providers, but now the medical insurers.
Mm-hmm. And the funny thing about this, you know, I've talked to a lot of people that I know in the healthcare industry that for years have looked at this and gone, this is a train wreck happening before our eyes.
Yep.
And it's exactly what we're watching right now is a train wreck because...
But this is how you get the rest of the way. You know, for the people who, you know, 5 years ago, 6 years ago said, oh, this is going to be a takeover of the industry because they listened to speeches that particular people made and the promises that were made. We can't do this right now. We're going to bake this in. This is going to be a 10-year plan. If you wanted to end private health insurance, this is how you would do it. You would make it so cumbersome, so expensive, and so undesirable that you could force people into the government market instead of a private market. And you would drive the businesses that have to have a profit for their shareholder, you drive them out of business, and you would say, well, see, it didn't work, so let's go with universal health care. And that never ends well for the mass population. It's okay for the people who are rich enough to fly, you know, the people in Canada can come to the United States, mm-hmm. or Dubai or wherever else, Cuba. But it doesn't work out for the guy who's working on the plant floor or the construction worker that doesn't have an extra couple hundred grand to fly somewhere for medical health tourism.
Well, and, you know, I think that's been my view of this all along is that, you know, the plan that they've got set up now, the whole idea is at the end of it, it's going to be so unsustainable. There's going to be so many people that can't get health insurance. There is going to be this outcry for somebody to do something. And then you will see the other part of that. Well, we'll have a government solution for that. We'll be able to, you know, fund this and fund that. And guess what? Taxes are going to go way up. Healthcare is going to go way down. I mean, we just see that.
Healthcare and choices go way down. And in Canada, until recently, it was against the law to go outside of their health system to go to a private provider in Canada. It was against the law until recently. They had I guess their Supreme Court overturned it and said you can cut in line if you have enough money.
Mm-hmm.
And in England, it is absolutely against the law. If you come to the United States to get medical health care and they find out about it, you're out of the system. You get to pay the taxes, but you don't get the benefit of the system. If you had to go to the emergency room or you had to go to a doctor instead of coming to the States to get treatment. So, you know, they knock choice down and they knock down there's a huge list of drugs that are no longer available for people who need them. You know, most notably, they were arguing about the breast cancer drugs that have a low margin for return. They're expensive drugs, but they're available on the market. Well, it is the intention of the actuaries to remove those because, you know, there's so little return on them. Well, forget that. It's my mom or my wife or my sister who might be positively affected by that costs mm-hmm. much. So we'll throw those people under the bus.
Okay. Chris, I appreciate your call today. And we move along here on the program. And as we continue ahead, you know what? We'll continue the discussion with you. But also, we're talking about something interesting, a part-time legislature. Lieutenant Governor says he's for it. We'll look a little bit further at it, decide if you're for it or not. We'll take your phone calls as well, 382-4280, 877-382-4280, as we continue on 590 WKZO. Degrees in Kalamazoo, 426, 590 WKZO, Jeremy Lawrence here with you. Well, you know, I promised earlier that we would give away some tickets to some things. And, you know, I like to keep people busy on the weekends. I really do. Because these are things that you can do this coming weekend. For example, we've got tickets to the Southwest Michigan Golf Show. This is taking place at the Kalamazoo County Expo Center. If you haven't been to the Expo Center, that alone is a reason to go because it's a great place to be. But the show takes place Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And if you're thinking spring and you're even remotely interested in golf, this is going to be the place to be. You're going to see a lot of cool, cool stuff. So four tickets to that. Also, because I just love to give things away, I've got four tickets to see the movie Noah, and that's coming out this weekend. And those four tickets are not only to see Noah at the Celebration Crossroads in Portage, but also to see it on the IMAX screen. So, I mean, imagine that, the whole great flood taking place right, I mean, almost all around you. They're just all-engrossing kind of feeling. So these are the things I have because, you know, it's indoor activities. It's going to be a weird weekend weather-wise. Mm-hmm. But so we've got that for you. Four tickets to that, four tickets to the golf show, and here are the things you got to do. First of all, you have to call 382-4280 or 877-382-4280. And when you call that number, you have to be – see, somebody's calling already.
Yes.
They don't even know what the question is. Because the ultimate thing is you've got to be able to answer the dumb, stupid, ridiculous trivia question that Michael is about to lay on us. Go right ahead.
Okay. Another golf-themed question, too, today.
Four.
All right.
I had to get that out of my system.
Yes.
All right.
All right. The question is, who defeated Ben Hogan in an 18-hole playoff in the 1955 United States Open Golf Tournament?
Mm-hmm. 1950. I guarantee you it wasn't me.
And it wasn't me either. I'm going to say that. I'll read the question one more time.
All right.
Who defeated Ben Hogan in an 18-hole playoff in the 1955 U.S. Open Golf Tournament?
Okay. Now all you have to do is have the correct answer for that, and you'll win this fine prize package, 382-4280 or 877-382-4280, as we continue on ahead. Well, one thing that I want to set up, and we'll continue the discussion on this as we get past the news break at the bottom of the hour. Lieutenant Governor Brian Calley, you know, I was asking a week or two ago, who is this guy? Because, you know, to me, to a lot of voters, the lieutenant governor is not somebody that you keep up with a lot. Well, he's actually stepping out and showing his support for what could end up being a ballot initiative that's going to end up on the ballot this time around. There's still some different petitions going out there, so it's not a done deal. But Lieutenant Governor Brian Calley chimed in and said that he is on board with supporters of the part-time legislature movement. He said, "I intend to vote for it if it makes it on the ballot this year." He did that in an email that he sent out to fellow conservatives. There are some people that are looking at this and saying, well, he's doing this because he's in a fight for his job. He's got to get sign off at the Republican convention. And he does have a Tea Party challenger in Wes Nakagiri. But ultimately, the lieutenant governor has come out and said, yep, I support that. It goes back to pointing to what he was doing when he was in the legislature, saying, yeah, I was in support of it there as well. We'll continue the discussion about that. Take your phone calls. Do you think it's a good idea to have a part-time legislature here in the state of Michigan? 382-4280, 877-382-4280. As the program continues on 590 WKZO. 24 degrees, 439, 590 WKZO. Jeremy Lawrence here with you. Michael in the producer's chair, causing trouble, as he generally does. And he caused some trouble just before the break in the form of one of his dumb, stupid, ridiculous trivia questions, which, believe it or not, somebody actually got the answer to.
Yeah, they did.
So who was it that won this wonderful ticket package?
The winner was Krista Kennedy from Decatur.
All right. All right. So she gets to enjoy all these great tickets, the golf outing, the movie, which, I mean, the movie alone is just something worth seeing mm-hmm. this weekend. It's gotten a lot of interesting press, so you can see for yourself, you know, separate fact from fiction and all of the press that it's gotten and see it on the IMAX screen, which is even better. So now I have to ask because, and you'll have to give the question again. If somebody's just joining us, they're going to go, who? What? So what was the question and then what was the answer?
The question I said was, who defeated Ben Hogan in an 18-hole playoff in the 1955 United States Open Golf Tournament? And some people guessed Sam Snead, Arnold's guessed Arnold mm-hmm. Palmer, and they did that over and over again. It seemed to be like every other call was that. Mm-hmm. And then there were some people that just hung up before they gave me an answer.
It's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't have any idea.
But the answer was Jack Fleck.
Mm-hmm.
And okay. he was a pretty unknown golfer. In fact, he used a set of clubs made by Ben Hogan's company to defeat Ben Hogan, except for the fact he kept his Tommy Armour driver and his Tommy Armour putter. And unfortunately, Jack Fleck just died last week.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So that was the answer to that. You know, I was going to guess, since it was 1955, Marty McFly. Because he must have done something
yes.
during that week.
Besides getting his parents together.
Yeah, you know, and finding a way to get 1.21 gigawatts of yeah. power for the DeLorean. There had to have been something he was doing, so I figured golf was probably it. So.
Actually, you know what? I believe the tournament took place at the Olympic Golf Club in San Francisco, and since the place... The movie takes place in Hill Valley. I wonder how far those two were apart.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, being that Hill Valley doesn't actually exist.
We'll just say it's right next to San Francisco then.
It could be anywhere.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's right there with San Francisco. So, interesting stuff. Some good tickets there and that kind of thing. And even with all the Tiger baseball that's going to be happening this week. Because, I mean, the rest of the week is devoted to that right about this time. We'll have an hour here, an hour there. Unless they get rained out, and then, you know, you have to put up with me. But I do have a couple more tickets to the Noah movie, so we'll have to have a giveaway a little bit later in the week. If somebody's going, I missed out on the Noah tickets, relax. Relax. I'll have a couple more.
Yes.
So we'll be able to take care of you there. But now, one of the things we wanted to get back to was the discussion that we had earlier. We were talking about Lieutenant Governor Brian Kelly, who came along, and you know, previous to this, I was kind of like, Brian Kelly, I really don't know much about the guy. And let's face it, most lieutenant governors are kind of like, oh, that's that, yeah, that's them. They, who are they again?
Yeah.
You know, there's not that wide knowledge of, oh, okay, the lieutenant governor, he stands for this, this, and that.
Yeah.
You know, so I think from the looks of it, Brian Kelly is trying to make a change here.
He's
so
coming out of the woodwork.
He's letting people know where he stands on things. And, yeah, granted, he's been in government before because he was a member of, I believe it was the State House. And when he was there, he actually stood up in support of part-time legislature. They had some sort of legislative proposal that went nowhere. But he was a part of the process, mm-hmm. saying, yeah, okay, this seems like it's a good idea. But he really came out in support of this. Now, there is a group that has got a statewide petition drive going right now. The petition drive would put language on the ballot that would make Michigan's legislature part-time so that, and, you know, the pay would be according and all of that stuff. So mm-hmm. That's how it would work. They're out there getting signatures. They get enough signatures, they'll be able to put it on the ballot this November. Well, the lieutenant governor came out and said, I intend to vote for it if it makes it on the ballot this year. It was an email that he wrote to fellow conservatives when he put this in here. He talks about the virtues of a part-time legislature. He says it produces fewer laws each year than the full-time system. That's a win for the people in my book. Now, one of the other things he quotes in his email was Henry David Thoreau, who said, and actually I think the actual quote is, the government that governs best governs least. He did kind of a take on that, mm-hmm. but basically the same feeling is, he says, the best government is that which governs least. Now, one of those is right, and I don't know which, but quite frankly, the sentiment is the same.
Yeah.
He mentioned that. Now, one of the things that's being brought up about this is that, yeah, and I think legitimately, based on the fact that he supported this before, yeah, chances are he hasn't changed his tune. He still supports it. But there has been some talk that this is a way to be able to build bridges with the Tea Party. Because when it comes to the lieutenant governor's post, this goes through the Republican convention, the state party convention that takes place where they pick the running mate for Governor Snyder. And he's going to have to sell himself to Republicans at that convention, which are more apt to be conservative.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some Tea Party people there as well. Well, he's got a challenger at the convention this year in Wes Snukagiri, who is a Tea Party organizer. And, you know, he's going to be a guy that that the lieutenant governors kind of want to head off here so that he can keep his job. Because I think ultimately, now I can't speak for Brian Kelly. I don't know him very well. And I've said that here on the airwaves before. I continue to say that because beyond this issue, I just don't know him that well. But I have a feeling, being lieutenant governor, he's probably got something in mind 4 years from now, if successful in this particular campaign, that, okay, lieutenant governor, it'd be nice to shave the first part of that off of there and end up being governor. You know, there's a lot of people in that position want to do that. I mean, we saw Dick Postumus did that when he was lieutenant governor under John Engler. Didn't end up working, but he tried it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you're going to see that kind of effort. So he wants to keep his job. And I think to some degree, he's got to feel like that this is a way to do it. That said, I think you ultimately need to look at this and say, well, wait a minute. All right. Part-time legislature. Is that a good idea? Does that, and this is one thing that his challenger said that he's got to consider, is that something that's going to make the governor's, you know, the governor's office that much more powerful? And in a sense, it would.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you've got a full-time legislature, they're there to say, well, wait a minute, all right, we're here to check and balance, and that's what the system does, is a check and balance. But, you know, I mean, is it something we need to have there just so you can check the governor? And whether or not, I mean, look, push aside whether you like Governor Snyder at this point, because at some point there will be a Democratic governor again.
Mm-hmm.
At some point after that, there will be a Republican governor again. It goes back and forth, and we know that. So ultimately, it's not necessarily a question of, well, I don't like what Snyder does, so yeah, we need that that legislative body there to hold him in check. And there would be an awful lot of people who would say, yeah, but the legislators right now are Republicans. Well, let's face it again on that side. Republicans are in control now. Eventually, at some point, Democrats will probably get control of one or the other house there at some point down the line. Soon, who knows? We don't know, but at some point, they'll probably get control again. So it goes back and forth. So ultimately, is this a good idea, a part-time legislature? There are some people who would say, you know what, saves us money. It'd save the taxpayer money so that things would be a little easier. Well, okay. But would things that we need to get addressed in this state get taken care of? I mean, think about that. They just passed something about, well, you know, here's the budget for this, and let's go home. And all of a sudden, you've got probably the worst pothole season we've ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
And activity needs to take place on that. So suddenly you'd have, okay, well, we got to get these guys back here for a special session if something like that comes up.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that sort of thing would come up at some point, that you'd have to have special session, and there would be costs involved in that, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, you know, I don't need to tell you all the details, but that's the bottom line. So what do you think about that? Do you think a part-time legislature is a good idea, or do you think we should just keep it the way that it is right now? 382-4280 or 877-382-4280. You can get in on the discussion as well. Also, you can go to 80373, text on your cell phone that number, and you can text your comments there, and we will get them. In fact, we've got somebody who's texted in already saying, we already have a part-time government, they just get paid full-time. Interesting.
Hmm.
So you can get your comments that way as well. As we continue on with the program with you, we'll be talking part-time legislature. What do you think about it? Love to hear from you as the program continues. Jeremy Lawrence here on 590 WKZO. Four degrees in Kalamazoo, 590 WKZO. It's 4:52. Glad to have you along for the ride this afternoon. It's talking about part-time legislature. The lieutenant governor has stepped out and said, "Yep, I'm in favor of that." But what do you think? 382-4280, 877-382-4280. Going to head over to the phones right now and chat with Jeff in Richland. Jeff, welcome.
Thanks, Jeremy. How you doing today?
Doing just great.
All right. You heard anything from Roger?
He's doing quite well. He's doing quite well. Thanks.
Right. I'm missing him. Missing his viewpoint. It's kind of fun to listen to you guys butt hats in there. Anyway, I think it'd be a great idea to go to a part-time legislature. I believe that the state of Wyoming and several other states have a part-time legislature.
Mm-hmm.
What that does is forces these guys to make decisions and, you know, put their heads together and make things happen. Seems like they've got a huge amount of time to talk about nothing instead of what they need to talk about to get things done.
Well, it's an interesting thought. I mean, you know, there's two ways to look at it, because sometimes you do need the legislature there to be able to chime in quickly and say, all right, we need to do something quickly. I mean, because let's face it, potholes are a problem right now, and they need to do something. They need to do something more than what they've done about it. But
then bring them in on a limited basis. Paying them to talk about, I don't know, National Pumpkin Day or whatever the heck, you know.
Or the state fruit, which has been the latest thing, yeah.
Exactly. I mean, there's a lot of things that, you know, because they're trying to fill time, they talk about ridiculous things instead of getting down to the business of the people of the state. And I think the governor could probably take a couple months off too, but he's only making $1 a year, right?
I have no idea what he's making per year. I'm not privy to that information.
Well, I thought that he decided that he was wealthy enough after selling Gateway off to the Chinese that he was wealthy enough he didn't need to take any pay from the state of Michigan other than the dollar.
You could be right. I'm not sure. I hadn't heard that, but it doesn't mean it isn't true. So,
well, yeah. All right. That's all I got.
Okay. So part-time government. You like the idea?
Yeah. I think that I would, you know, I work construction. They give me 30 days, 60-day window to get something done.
Mm-hmm.
I need to get it done in that period of time. And, you know, if you pull their, you know, their endless amount of time to get these things done, you know, okay, you guys got 60 days to pass the budget, 30 days to pass the budget, get it done, you know. That's what the state government's about. I mean, you talk about all these emergency measures with the potholes and everything else. Well, then we need to build that into the budget so that there is some contingency there. And I mean, that's the way we do it in construction.
Okay. All right. Well, Jeff, appreciate your call and your time today.
All right, thank you.
Okay. And we continue on ahead. If you'd like to be a part of things, 382-4280, 877-382-4280. I think, you know, this is, as I said before, one of the things that you see the lieutenant governor stepping out on, and I think that's one of those deals where he's trying to, yeah, and I think he legitimately agrees with this based on what I'm seeing. Mm-hmm. But I think he's also trying to kind of establish that brand of, look, I'm conservative. You can trust me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this is an issue that, and it's not a hard issue for him to come out and say, you know what, I'm going to take a stand on this because I agree with it. And it's obvious he's agreed with it before because he came up with a proposal. This was a proposal that he put together with Tom McMillan, then State Rep Justin Amash, and then Representative Dave Ageman.
Mm-hmm.
And they all came up with this. Didn't really go anywhere, but it's there, and that support is there. And so I don't know that it's a stretch, but I think at the same time, something like this would help people that are in my shoes that are going to go, Brian Calley, who is he? You know, because I think there's a lot more people out there than just me that are going to go, all right, well, I knew Snyder was governor, but lieutenant governor, I was scratching my head on that one. And, you know, and I knew of him, but I didn't know him very well. And so, you know, this is one of those things as we approach an election year that we are in. You know, this is one of those things where you get to define who you are for the mm-hmm. voters. And so that way they're going, well, all right, you know, I'm voting for Snyder, but you know, that Brian Calley guy is not bad either. You know, if they're looking at him and going, oh, okay, yeah. And the thing that's gotta be a problem though for the lieutenant governor, and right now he is connected with Rick Snyder, he is the running mate, he is the guy, that kind of thing. But he's still connected with him, even in this situation. The head of the movement for the part-time legislature came out and said, honestly, Brian was one of the people who started this back in 2009. To hear he still supports it is absolutely delightful. Here's the sentence that I thought was interesting. It's refreshing in that it shows Rick Snyder cares about Michigan and bringing it back. Okay, but Brian Calley came out and said something about this, not Rick Snyder. So he's got to be sitting here going, oh!
Yes.
I was trying to come out and make a statement here. You know, but he is going to be connected with Rick Snyder on things just simply because he's his right hand.
Yeah.
You know, so he's going to be connected with that. But I got to think that at the same time, he differentiates himself a little bit in being able to say, this is my issue. These are my people. And this is something I think we need to do. It's a strong move on his part, I think, and one that was well worth it for him.
Yeah, it's good that he's coming out on an issue like this because he just can't really stand there and, you know, like a statue, mm-hmm. you know, and mm-hmm. we don't know what he is.
So it'll be interesting to see how this develops. Now, one thing that's developed, and we just have a short minute or so to tell you about it, but there's going to be a class at MSU this fall, apparently, or this summer, actually, called Surviving the Zombie Apocalypse.
Now, that ought to be very interesting.
It should be interesting, but, you know, they're not going to get into this whole, okay, The Walking Dead kind of thing. The course will dig into how people handle themselves during natural disasters and major catastrophic events.
Okay.
So I think they're trying to market it more than just say, yeah. You know, if the zombies attack, here's what you do. You know, because I don't think they're going that way.
You go all Resident Evil on them.
But it's an interesting way of marketing this, but the idea is they're going to roll in anthropology, sociology, and geology into all of this, offering it to MSU students and guests to be able to catch up with what you do if some sort of catastrophic thing like, you know, for instance, zombies comes up.
Yeah.
You know, so interesting stuff. We'll close out the show with that. Tiger baseball tomorrow. We're going to be checking in after that, so be sure that you're with us. Have a good evening. Talk to you later.
Kalamazoo's news, weather, and traffic station is 590 WKZO. Kalamazoo.